Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by Design Crowd, a website that helps startups and small businesses outsource or crowdsource custom graphics, logos, and web design from over 500,000 designers around the world. Check out designcrowd.com/hack. That's designcrowd.com/hack to learn more and receive a special $100 VIP offer when you start your next project. Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a digital nomad, author, and an entrepreneur. He spent the formative years of his career working as an investment banking analyst until catching the entrepreneurial bug and going out on his own. Using skills and contacts from his banking days, my guest is now the founder of Assemble Advisory, an equity crowdfunding company that has already helped entrepreneurs raise over $11 million. Now, let's hack Nathan Rose. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by Braintree. Do you remember that first dollar you made online? Just remember that. That's a hard number to forget and a hard day to forget. But now you want to grow to make your billionth. Have you found the right payments partner to grow with you? Braintree lets you accept every way to pay, from PayPal to Apple Pay and everything in between. All it takes is one integration. And it doesn't matter what currency your customers use, because Braintree lets you accept over 130 of them. To learn more about how your company can grow with Braintree, visit braintreepayments.com/hack. That's braintreepayments.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have a very, very special guest. Nathan, welcome to the show.
Oh, John, it's great to be here.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun, so I guess we should jump right into it.
Sounds good to me, man.
Awesome. Okay, Nathan, I know that you wear many, many hats, but today we are talking to Nathan, the entrepreneur. So as an entrepreneur, Nathan, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think it's been a spirit of curiosity. That's when I set off to start my own business, it was using the skills that I already had, but finding creative ways to do that. So I think as entrepreneurs, we always need to be creative, but we need to also understand what we're good at. And that's what I've been able to do.
So this spirit of curiosity,
yeah.
Is this something that you sort of like, did you consciously know you needed to do this? Or is this something just inherent within you, like personally, that you've carried along with you?
I think all of us start life as curious creatures, but sometimes schooling or working in a job or, you know, the pressures that come with conforming to society can beat that out of you. So for me, it was a very conscious step away from a career path that I was on, that I was being channeled in a certain direction. And by jumping out of it, I was able to rediscover that spirit of curiosity, I feel.
Nice. I love it. I love it. And it's true. I think we all are born naturally curious and then it's beaten out of us somehow or something happens and we lose it. But you're right. Like entrepreneurship to me is literally just that creation of something out of nothing. So we have to be creative. But starting your own business has been fairly recent for you.
That's right.
And you came from investment banking, which as much as I know of it, which is very little, but banking in general, right, it's very far from entrepreneurship. It's very sort of structured and I guess bureaucratic, I'm assuming even over there in New Zealand as well. But what brought it from taking that path, like school all your life, to kind of the big end goal where people want to get is to investment banking? That's like the goal. That's the best job you can have. And then leaving that and starting your own thing. What's your thought process that brings you to that?
Well, when you're going through school and you have, as you say, a pinnacle goal that you want to reach, and then you reach that goal and it's not all it's cracked up to be, it creates a crisis, I think, because you've spent all this time and all these years working towards something, getting that degree, getting the best possible marks, going through that interview process, and then you finally get there and it just doesn't connect at all well with your personality or what you want to do. I mean, you're right. It's very hierarchical, very bureaucratic. And I think the big problem or challenge I had within that organization was the sense of being ready or not to do something. And that was going to be determined by how many years or how well you could follow instructions from other people. So in order to get any kind of autonomy within investment banking, you need to do that for, I think, 10 or 15 years. And after a couple of years, I felt stifled by that I felt like I was ready to take on bigger challenges, but the path in front of me just wasn't going to allow me to do that for another decade. And that just wasn't acceptable to me and to my conscience and to my, I guess, to my feeling, right? That ultimately, if you're not enjoying life and you're not feeling challenged by things, then you've got to make some changes in a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I know that a lot of people listening to the show and a lot of people just in general, no matter if it's investment banking or not, sometimes you work so hard to get to where you are. And then when you have that feeling that it's not all it's cracked up to be, it's an emptying feeling, but most people still just put up with it. They don't quit and then go and start their own business, right? I mean, what was like the fear, or what was the, like, Nathan, just get over it, man. Just work through it. Like, how did you try and talk yourself out of it? Or was it just, I have to go? That's it.
I think it's a degree of painfulness, and different people suffer this in different ways. And some people, of course, don't feel the pain at all. They're actually totally happy with earning that salary and going through the motions, and it connects well with who they are. And by the way, that feeling of getting to a place where you didn't want to be in the first place, that can happen in entrepreneurship too. So it's not like we entrepreneurs have a, you know, somehow a superior moral position, right? I think it's just being more deliberate about what you want out of life. And part of that's being mature as an adult to reject some of the messages that are being thrown your way if it doesn't connect well with your personality. But I think it was just, for me, I felt it more strongly than those around me, my colleagues and my peers.
Yeah, and you're right. It's not different with entrepreneurship. We can still get to that place and realize that it's not all it's cracked up to be. But it's interesting because you went into equity crowdfunding. So you started a business that was helping other entrepreneurs like realize their dreams through equity crowdfunding. So
yeah.
I like that. It's almost like you deliberately are surrounding yourself with other people who are thinking like you, who that degree of painfulness is so much that they're going to risk everything to start this business, and you're going to help them find money.
Yeah, I think the business that I started was perhaps a function of the skills that I already had and where I saw my entrepreneurial journey take me. So one thing that I decided very early on was I wanted to run this business location independent. And for the last 18 months, I've done that. I've been living in 20 different countries around the world. And in order to do that, I thought, well, what's an easy way to get started? There are benefits and downsides of selling your time when you're starting a business. One of the benefits is it's really easy to get started and to learn by doing. And as you say, by surrounding yourself with other entrepreneurs who are inspired to make their own changes in the world. So I was using my skills, but I was using it in a different setting, away from the corporate types and more with people with big dreams and the ambitions to achieve them.
Nice. I love it. So living in 20 different countries since you started.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that this probably played a big role in, obviously you couldn't do that as an investment banker.
No, I don't think so. In fact, I know so. You might be able to, as a New Zealander, get a secondment off to London or something, but that's about it. You certainly wouldn't be doing it in rural China or in Georgia or in Hungary, where I am now.
Wow. So this probably played a big part in your decision as well. You wanted the lifestyle, the independence, and not just sort of like the creation of it yourself. You wanted to be able to do what you wanted, where you wanted, and when you wanted.
Yeah, for sure.
Fair enough.
Of course, being an entrepreneur isn't always about that. You've got to knuckle down and do some work too. But that freedom aspect has always been extremely important to me. And you sacrifice different things to get it. But yeah, for me, it's been at the core of everything that I've done and the way that I've crafted this business.
Nice. I love it. So at the beginning, your one thing is your spirit of curiosity. Now, every blog post, every business expert talks about the 80-20 rule in business.
Right.
So you're supposed to do that 20% that you're good at and get that 80% result. You're supposed to do what you're good at and then delegate all the rest of it. Nathan, can you tell me something that you are absolutely not good at in your business?
I think it's curiosity beyond the topics that I already know well. So curiosity can be deeper into a subject that you're already passionate about. And I think that's me. I find it very hard to look at the blog posts about search engine optimization or Google AdWords or these topics, which I have no grasp of whatsoever, and to just not to just blanch and turn away and think, oh, this is too hard, right? I think getting deeper and deeper into one subject does rise you up that 80-20 level, because your skills move from being worth $100 an hour to $1,000 an hour to $10,000, and you know, you can outsource the rest. But I do think, to my detriment, I should have at least a more rudimentary understanding of some of these other areas so that I can manage other people better, if nothing else.
Right. That whole knowing enough to sort of be dangerous in it. So you can at least know if the person's on the right track and doing the right job once you do delegate it out.
Right, right.
So do you actively say, like, dedicate 20% of your week or something to learning things that you don't know, like SEO or paid traffic? Or do you, like, are you actively trying to bring those things up, or do you just wish that you did?
Well, you asked me for a weakness, and I think it's something that I probably should do. So as soon as I get off this call, I might add that to my weekly schedule. But look, I think you have to work out what works for you. For me, my marketing channels are blog posts, the book that I've got coming out, and podcasts. So, you know, I don't think it's possible to become an expert in absolutely everything. And if you try to spread yourself too thin, then you end up being good at none of them.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so this is a great time to move into this book, because let's use it to cover projects.
Yeah.
Because I know that, I mean, as a business owner, I mean, you're traveling, you're doing a lot of things, and you're building a business, but you still have to determine sort of what the next project. So you told us how you decided to start Assemble Advisory, but now that you have that running, you've chosen to write a book that's coming out November 1st of this year. I want to know what your process is, Nathan, and whether it was a written process or just an internal gut process, but what did you go through to determine that this project of writing this book was a great sort of smart next step for you?
Last year, I spent a month in Thailand at an entrepreneur house with a bunch of other entrepreneurs who run location-independent businesses. There were 20 of us, and they're all doing different things. And it's really interesting to get a sense of Amazon FBA or get a sense of selling information products. And one of the advisors there talked to me about the idea of moving from being an expert into being an authority. And the parallel he gave me was the difference between Dr. Phil, the guy that appears on TV and, you know, earns millions and millions of dollars because he's Dr. Phil, and every other psychologist out there who is probably just as smart, if not smarter than him, in the actual act of doing the psychology work. But because Dr. Phil is a better promoter and he's been on Oprah and he's got all these other credibility indicators, that's what's led him to being the most successful. So a book was a great way to do that. And I knew that I was already a good writer. That's one of my strengths. I'm a good writer, and hence, I suppose, the blog posts being one of the preferred ways that I do my marketing. So I said, right, let's make it happen. Took 4 months to put it all together, including the writing phase and including the marketing phase. There's a lot to it, especially when you're self-publishing like I am. So that was the decision process, and it's really gratifying to be close to its realization now.
Yeah, I have to ask, are you, because of this house that you lived in Thailand,
mm-hmm.
are you part of the DC?
I am, yeah.
You weren't in Barcelona, were you?
I was too. Oh, great. Yep. We didn't run into each other.
So we've probably actually met, and I'm only just realizing this now.
And you're not going to Bangkok?
I'm not, seeing as it starts this week. No, I'm not. Are you?
No, I'm not. It's a little close to the book launch. The pictures are starting to pop up on Facebook of everybody arriving at the Conrad and having a great time. But
I see.
We're We're still here struggling away.
Nice, nice. All right. So equity crowdfunding.
Yeah.
This is something that's probably fascinating to a lot of people. Can you just tell us what equity crowdfunding is?
Yeah. So the big distinction is between equity crowdfunding and the crowdfunding that most people have heard more of, which is the Kickstarter Indiegogo style crowdfunding. So Kickstarter Indiegogo, they offer projects, they offer pre-launches of products. Another DC-er are the Manal guys who ran a successful campaign on Kickstarter for their backpacks. So you're pre-ordering a backpack. The difference with that and a parallel equity crowdfunding campaign would be if you were to become a shareholder in Manal. So the difference is that you become a shareholder instead of ordering the product.
Okay, so this is basically, this is like getting seed money or venture capital for your business or your business idea. But rather than going to venture capitalists and making the pitch in San Francisco, you can do it through crowdfunding.
Exactly. Yeah. So instead of one person writing out a check for 500 grand, you can get 1,000 people giving you 500 bucks each or different amounts. So that way, the decision is placed into the hands of the people that you can market to instead of one big guy in an office on Sandhill Road.
Right. This is interesting. And this is something that you, I guess you didn't do this as like when you were in investment banking, I'm assuming, but you saw that it existed and now you've become like the expert within it. Or how is this working? I don't know. I honestly don't know how this is working. And I would love to know how people are using this within their businesses.
Yeah, sure. It's at a different stage in many different parts of the world. Because it's an offer of shares, it ends up being regulated by the SEC in the US or by the FCA in the UK. So the US, the laws changed in May 16 of this year, and it's had a quick start where people can raise up to $1 million, and some campaigns have actually done this. In other parts of the world, like where I'm from, it's been going longer. We've just ticked over 2 years. In the UK and continental Europe, it's been going for around 5 years, so it's much more mature, strangely, than in the US over the Atlantic Ocean. The types of companies that tend to use it, they tend to fall into two different categories. There's the consumer products, which have a natural reach and a natural crowd attached to them. So you think of a beer company or if you think of a clothing company, these are businesses which people can understand, albeit they're not sort of super hot tech startup type businesses. But the super hot tech startup businesses can do it too. And they have different ways of marketing themselves. So other companies that have used it have been in biomedicine, they've been in fintech. And it enables people to, you know, I think, to keep more of their own company culture, because since you're not beholden to one single VC investor, you're instead beholden to the crowd, you can retain more of your company culture and you can be more in charge of setting your own company's direction than if you had a VC on board.
Nice. So that was, I guess, what I was trying to get at, which is, I mean, I'm Canadian, but I knew in the States that there was that they get involved with funding, right? So It changed in May 2016. I still don't know if it's available in Canada, but this is changing and it's evolving the way it's working. But I didn't quite get it. You said there's two main categories, consumer products and what was the other one?
The super hot tech startups, what I would call.
Oh, it is the super. Oh, okay. I thought you said it wasn't the super hot tech.
Right. So there's two differences. Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. So the book is going to give people sort of a stepping stone. Is it for Americans? Is it for Europeans? Is it broken in? Who is this for? And like that's listening out there right now that has a product or a business idea or that they've already started. Who is the person that should go grab your book?
Yeah. The avatar for the book is someone who's heard of equity crowdfunding but doesn't know how to weigh it up between the different funding methods. So I go into the advantages and disadvantages of equity crowdfunding. And then once you decide that equity crowdfunding is for you, I'll step through how to choose a funding portal, because there are many out there. It's not like the duopoly of Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and they're different in different countries too. And how to prepare your company for the upcoming raise, valuation, getting a pitch deck together, forming a marketing plan, and then what to do during the campaign and after it, regardless of whether you've succeeded or failed, because it's going to leave you in a different place after the funding round, one way or the other. So yeah, it's really for startups and growing companies, as the title says. And it's for a worldwide audience. So to put it together, I've interviewed 20 startups and growing companies from all over the world who've run successful crowdfunding campaigns and got their best tips.
Nice. And as this is the new project that we're talking about, mm-hmm. and it's coming out in November, and you spent 4 months actively working on it, what does success look like to you for the book?
Well, first and foremost, for it to launch on time, because I've told everyone 1st of November.
Well, we're right just going to take that as a given, Nathan.
I'll say that it's a given now as we do this interview, but when you set out long range that you're going to set a date, well, that's great that I'm actually going to get there on time. What's success? Well, I think it's going to be measured by traffic to my site. It's going to be measured by number of people who sign up to my email list. It's going to be determined by number of downloads and by revenue. I don't really have too many markers out there as to what success was, but like Taylor Pearson, for example, he has another DC-er. I'm following his template to launch this thing, and he was able to generate multiple tens of thousands of dollars from direct revenue from the book itself. If I can do that, I'd be pretty happy. But I think more than that, it's what happens at the bottom of the funnel coming out from this book. So some people will read it and they'll want extra help. I'm also looking forward to hearing the case studies of people who are just able to read the book and, you know, do it just through reading the book alone with no extra help. But I do expect there'll be some people who need a little extra handholding. So I'm just really interested, actually, at this point. I'm really interested and my expectations are very fluid. I think just getting it done is enough of an achievement, though, that I'll be happy either way.
Yeah, fair enough, because it is. It's a huge achievement. And going into it, your first time it leaves open all the metrics, basically. And I mean, comparing yourself to any other book, including Taylor's, it's kind of like, doesn't really make sense. It's like you can't compare yourself to like J.K. Rowling's new book, because one thing, you're completely different markets. That's just the market size is different in every single market that you're working within. And so there's going to be a different top and a different bottom. But the book looks awesome. It sounds like you've picked your audience super, super well and specifically, and that it is really going to help the people that it's meant to help, which to me, I would think would be success. Whatever that number is and however many people and however much money you make from that, you're right. I think those are just sort of extra metrics after the fact. So yeah, just congratulations on finishing the book on time and getting it out the door. Now, I guess, is the time where we should specifically tell the listener where they can track this book down.
Yeah, sure. It's at assembleadvisory.com/book. And for the listeners out there, it launches on the 1st of November, and it'll actually be free to download on Kindle for those first few days. So go ahead and take advantage of that. Leave a review and you can get an audio book as well. And yeah, I think it'll be useful for any startup that's looking at funding and interested in how equity crowdfunding might provide an alternative.
It's awesome. So you've done the audiobook, and it looks like you are doing a launch party for anybody in London.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. So the exact details of where and when that'll be, I mean, it'll be on the evening of the 1st of November, but I haven't confirmed the venue yet. But if you were to sign up to my email list, I'll make sure that everyone's kept informed of that too.
Awesome. Awesome. Very, very cool. So assembleadvisory.com is the website. assembleadvisory.com/book is where to go and sign up to be on the pre-launch list for the book right now. You'll get a sample chapter and updates, and then you'll also get the free download when it drops on November 1st. So stop by there when you have a chance. Nathan, thank you so much for taking the time to chat today. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoy. How long do you plan on traveling for more, this whole independent lifestyle?
Interesting question. I think I'll be doing a bit more home basing next year. Like, you know, you're in the DC too, so you're aware that sometimes after a long period of travel, it's something that most people don't think of, but you do get a hankering for some of the more basic comforts, like the ability to, you know, keep ordinary relationships with people and gain real friends. So I think next year I'll be basing myself somewhere for a while.
Nice. Yeah, it's true. It's, you want the freedom, and then when you have the freedom, then you also get the itch to be back without it.
We always want what we can't have, huh?
yeah, well, I don't know if it goes that far, but to a point, you're right. But I mean, the travel freedom is amazing. And then also being home with friends and family sometimes is good too. So that's awesome. Well, Nathan, thanks again so much for taking the time. And please just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thanks, John. And really appreciate you having me on the show. Cheers.
Nathan, thank you for joining me. That was a lot of fun. And I didn't even notice this Dynamite Circle connection. So the Dynamite Circle, for you out there listening, dynamitecircle.com, it's a paid forum for entrepreneurs running businesses that I happen to be a part of. But there's probably about 1,500 people in there. And so I don't get to know everyone. And I'm not super active in forums. It's just not really my thing. But there are some really, really cool people in there. So that's what we were talking about. And you can check out dynamitecircle.com yourself if you wish. So going through this conversation, I had to go back. I had to go back and listen to the answers that Nathan gave me, where he went, what he kind of avoided, and what he kind of went deep on. So I went back, and then I went back again, and then I went back again. That third time going back through the conversation, there was one thing that Nathan said that was so very, very clear to me. It was just it was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
You have to work out what works for you. For me, my marketing channels are blog posts, the book that I've got coming out, and podcasts.
And that's the hack. Nathan, this couldn't be simpler, yet it's not easy. But you have to figure out, this is the whole show, Hack the Entrepreneur in general, is based around, you have to find out what works for you. It's my job to bring you hundreds of different entrepreneurs doing hundreds of different things in an infinite number of different ways. But you have to find what works for you, implement it, and run with it. So this is the same when choosing your marketing channel. But it goes beyond that. With the simplicity of how Nathan names it, he's like, you have to figure out the marketing channels that work for you. What works for Nathan is blogging, his new book coming out, and podcasts. Those are his marketing channels that he's defined. For me, it's podcasting, email marketing, and writing guest posts on other people's sites. Those are absolutely the three. When you're looking to increase your revenue and grow your business, don't initially look for new channels and new things you can do. Look at what you are doing now. Clearly define at least the top thing that you are doing, if not the top three, but the top one for sure. If that's the thing, the channel, the marketing channel that's bringing you the most, whatever metric it's you're looking for, if it's visitors to your site, if it's downloads to your show, if it's earnings on the bottom line of revenue for your SaaS product, you have to define that. I can't define that, but whatever that metric is, whatever channel's bringing you the greatest of that metric, double and triple down on that. Before trying to figure out new channels, do more of what's working. But first you have to define what's working and what's working for you. Nathan, I love it. Thank you very much. All right, hacktheentrepreneur.com is the place to be. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/review is the place to go on your iPhone right now and leave a review for the show. I'd love to be able to read yours. I would. It'd be great. It helps the show so much. And if you're on an iPhone, it takes you like 2 minutes. Not quite. Hacktheentrepreneur.com/review will take you right to this magical place where you can just, all you have to do is just write in your review and rating. Yeah. Good reviews, bad reviews, it doesn't matter. All reviews are great. Well, if you hate this show, I guess, I don't know, maybe you wouldn't be here right now. Check out hacktheentrepreneur.com and the show notes for Nathan Rose will be up there with links to Assemble Advisory, his new book, and Dynamite Circle, as well as Nathan on social medias that we can find. All right, it's been fun. I thank you for stopping by, as always. Until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.